You're listening to the Full Time Podcast with Matt, Alex, and Marcel.
Hey guys, welcome back to Full Time, the A-League Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Olsen. I've got Marcel Abood, Alex Yarmous, and Zach Colebrook alongside me for today's show. And coming up on the show, we have a rather curious situation with Marco Kurtz, Alan Stajic hitting back at the Haters, getting a win for the Mariners. Costa Barbarouzas touching tribute to the Christchurch victims. Roy Krishna stacking up more supposed Johnny Warren medal points. And Melbourne City shocking Sydney FC. Boys, we're going to start the show with Adelaide United and this this talk of now Marco Kurtz leaving and all the problems that he was having with management and problems there. But more so on the team themselves. If we look at the top six, we have Wellington now up in fourth, looking comfortable with, 11 goals in two games. We also have Melbourne City in a bit of form, as I've said. They've beaten Sydney FC this week. Does it pretty much leave Adelaide in sixth? And I know it's only, two, 3 points the difference. But it's hard to say on current form that they'll be getting points up on any of their opponents. Now, I don't actually know who they're playing in the next couple of weeks. But I personally don't see them leaving that sort of sixth spot. What do you boys think?
Look, if anyone's going to drop out of the sixth, it will be Adelaide. I think that can be confirmed after this weekend. But whether the Jets can catch up, because after the Wanderers result, I can't see it happening for them. Whether the Jets can catch up, who knows? I personally think the sixth is probably set after this week, but it's football. Anything can happen.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think the top six is settled. The only positions that will probably change are from third to fifth. That can go topsy-turvy. I just think Adelaide are going to finish sixth, and I don't think Jets will sneak into the sixth, and Wanderers kind of blew their chance. So I think the top six is already settled. Just the matter of where everybody finishes will be the deciding factor.
And that, you talk about third to fifth being interchangeable. I would disagree. I think Victory are way too good. And sort of Sydney FC could even still, end up probably being third. You'd like to think so with the form that Victory have had the fore part of the season, or sort of the start of the season. That sort of begs the question of if it's only really the Phoenix and City that can really move. I mean, why was it that, 2 weeks ago we were seemingly talking up a very exciting end to the season, and it's been shut down very quickly. And this is totally unrelated, but I've been seeing lots of talk about simultaneous kickoffs, and I think it's absolute hogwash. Why would you want to have that when we have a finals campaign to look forward to anyway? And on that point, you can't change anything besides, venues for these games. And it's not really that big of a deal when you factor in that, any team can win on any day, and the venue, therefore, doesn't really matter that much. So I hate the idea of a simultaneous kickoff, but I'm totally going off topic here. Back on Adelaide United, it's a weird dynamic whereby they know Marco Kurtz is going to be leaving. So how do a lot of these players feel at the moment?
Look, I would probably if I was an Adelaide player and I knew that my contract was up and my coach was going, I would feel very uncomfortable with my current position, because if I've got less than 3-4 months running on my contract, who am I actually going to impress? Where is my future going to lie, and who do I speak to about my future? So I think these boys who are, having their contracts ending, they're not playing for a contract with Adelaide United, but yet they're putting themselves up in the shop window for other clubs, be it within Australia or internationally, to snap them up, because that's a really bad predicament to be in. You have no coach. Maybe the coach for the remainder of the season is just fighting for his personal pride so they don't, bomb out. But what do you, as a player, what do you stand for? What do you strive for?
No, it's a wonderful question to ask. And I think, if you're one of the leaders in that team, if you're an Isaias or a Craig Goodwin, I wonder where your personal inspiration would come from, because, you could sort of have it handed down to you what Gaffer is saying, what Marco is saying. And it would lack meaning, knowing that in the back of the mind, it doesn't matter what happens next, this guy's leaving and we're going to have to go through a transformation period. So yeah, it's definitely frustrating. On the game itself, yeah, they were miserable. Perth were at their sort of okay, you know, they're going at strides, winning the game, but they aren't looking spectacular. Theme that we were seeing across the season, and the first goal, Diego Castro almost sort of kicking it in. And I apologise, I don't know the defenders who it was, but he essentially just kicked it off the back of his heel, and it's flipped in, and it was just a very frustrating night for them on the whole. So, yeah, I don't want to say that they're in sort of dire straits, but I think they and both Melbourne City have had very questionable seasons. It's fair to say if we look at all 10 teams. It's very there's just something about it that makes you frustrated because they've not been at their best, right? And they've been pretty mediocre, but at the same time they haven't really been, you know, Mariners level of dire. So it's a difficult one for both franchises. And on that note, Mr. Cobrick, I'll finally get you in on the action. Your Mariners, did you see that coming in the fashion that it did?
In the fashion that it did would actually probably be exactly what most people would have thought of. I did hear a lot of talk that it would be almost movie-worthy for Stajic to come in after his issues with the FFA and then instantly get a win with the Mariners. And a lot of people did actually hope for it in some backwards way. And admittedly, that's exactly what happened. But then Mariners fell apart in that last 15 in the way we've seen so many times this season. And it was, you saw it on the face of the defenders when the penalty was given. They saw it all happening again.
Now, was it a penalty at the end?
Yeah, of course it was.
It was a penalty. I'll admit that one. It was a soft penalty, but at that point in the game, in a derby, the lightest contact, you're expecting it. You've just got to be more careful. It's always a penalty then.
Alex, you know, it's frustrating. It's frustrating then because I think the thing about this game, it's not rivals. It's not, you know, the 8-2 drubbing and all that crap that was going on. It's more just the fact that this actually was the nail in the finals coffin, really, wasn't it? And, you know, I'd question what the hell has happened in the last 20 or so weeks. Because Laurie McKenna, you know, Ernie Merrick, they're great dudes. The team was fine. So what actually went wrong in this season for Newcastle?
I just think teams have figured Newcastle out. How they played, they didn't last year, and Newcastle took advantage. And this year, everyone knows, okay, Newcastle are going to attack numbers. They're going to move the ball quickly. Let's put 10 at the back and shut them down. And that's exactly what the Mariners did, and fair play to them, because I think they had that 20-minute spell where they scored the 3 goals. And you have to say, they did deserve the win at the end of the day. It was deja vu for me, personally, after watching the North London derby and my beloved Arsenal 2 weeks ago with Aubameyang missing that penalty in the 90th minute. And I was sitting next to my little brother and told him, I'm like, I experienced this 90th minute penalty drama 2 weeks ago. Watch it happen again. And bloody hell, it did.
But, I often forget that you're an Arsenal fan, just on that note. But it's not relevant. What were you saying?
Well, I was just about to say, football's a funny game with karma. Roy last year literally beating the Mariners on his own, scoring 5 against them. And then what happens? He misses 2 absolute sitters of penalties. I'm sorry. The second penalty, what really frustrates me is how do you hit it in the exact same spot with the exact same power? Einstein defined insanity as doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Well, did you expect a different result, Roy? I mean, it's just frustrating for me. But as I said, fair play to Zach and fair play to the Mariners.
Okay, Zach, back to you. Jem Kadishan, he looks fantastic for the Mariners. I guess any new blood that's going to come into that team, especially one with foreign experience, is going to be a well-needed impact for that team, no doubt. But how long is he signed for? What's his contract details like? And do you think he can actually have a very decent impact on the team? Looking forward to this.
On his contract, I'm not sure if he's officially listed until for next season as well. However, from inside the club, I've heard that he is expected to be on for next season as captain permanently. And
well, he was captain on Saturday, wasn't he?
Yeah, that was a decisions Daesh brought in instantaneously, from what I heard. Just what you said, Matt, about young blood coming in, I find it. I heard a rumor coming around from a confidential source that Jacob Iliopoulos from playing in Cyprus currently, a 22-year-old centre back, he's Australian. I feel like someone young coming in to defence, particularly with Aspro likely or confirmed going to Western United, I think having Karachan in front of the defence, as Stajic has appeared to set him up, would be brilliant, as it just adds experience and quality to where we've lacked it, I suppose.
And, you know, on the Stajic debate, I just want to say, obviously, congratulations to him. You know, it was fantastic what happened against the rival team. We know the storyline, etc. But is this actually enough to sort of impress and say that he should be extended? It's one game of football, I know. But the team are that dire. There's something about him. If he goes and gets more of these 3 points, you might as well keep him on for the next season. I wouldn't say it's out of the realms of possibility that Millenkamp or, you know, even Mr. Mark Charlesworth can maybe get a foreign manager. But I would just stick with Stajic instead. I think it's a good enough option for now. And as I said, he clearly has the hunger and wants to get the results. How do you feel about the managerial position?
As a person and from his past, I actually really, really rate Stajic. I reckon he has potential to be great for the club. Personally, I think I'd love him to stay on at the club, but if you think from his position, if he stays on permanently, he's at every risk of completely ruining his managerial career.
It's a fair point.
I think it's a bit risky for someone like him in his current situation and in the club in the current situation that it's in. It'd be a smart move if it pulls off well, but if it fails, it'll fail spectacularly. Like, it'll go up in flames.
Like I said to Olsen the other week now, I think it was, really in his six-game stint right now, a win's a success for him and anything else isn't his fault and it doesn't affect him. However, if he signs on for the next season and gets his squad that he builds and brings in, then it has the potential to backfire on him. And whether that's a risk he's willing to take after this whole FFA incident, well, quite frankly, I don't actually see why he would stay on at the club, especially with Charlesworth really not supporting him or any coach.
Who the hell would take that job? No, I completely understand. But there's also just the fantasy of, you know, what if I'm the one to turn the club around? And I think it appeals to Alan in that sense. But we'll see where that one goes. We'll move on to Melbourne Victory. Game on Saturday night was a routine win in the most typical sense. Despite a silly turnover that led to an Eric Breakout goal, the Victory got it done easy. And the highlight of the game, no doubt, was Costa Barbarouzis kissing the pitch, kneeling down to the pitch in, almost replicating a Muslim prayer for those that died in the Christchurch attack. It's very emotional, obviously, but for the New Zealand football community and as a New Zealander himself, it was fitting that he ended up scoring and making the most of the opportunity. As we know, a New Zealand the New Zealand futsal goalkeeper was killed in the attack. I'm not sure there is much else that we can say about it other than it was very touching and it was a big moment for Costa. Any thoughts or comments that you guys might have on the situation?
Look, it is incredibly impressive after something like that happening that's so impactful on one's life to go out there and still perform as a professional. And so I think it's very fairy tale perfect that he'd then score and be able to pay his respects, I suppose.
It was unfortunate not to get a hat-trick as well, in my opinion. He had a really good opportunity towards the end, but couldn't finish it off.
Yeah, I thought he actually played a great game. His two goals were absolutely fantastic, especially the first one. I thought the tribute was pretty touching, and I think his performance top that off as well. I think Melbourne could have won at least like 4-5, 4-5-1. Brisbane were very sorry. You know, it just, you can tell they're just down and out, and they're waiting for the season to end, just like the Mariners. They need the season to end just to end them out of their misery.
I would argue even then that the Mariners have more to play for with Stajic and what have you, with, you know, Karachan now being captain. And I'd say Brisbane, on the other hand, yeah, they're just waiting. Darren Davies is also an outgoing manager. We should remember that as well. So, yeah, and it was just one of those games where you're like, oh, why am I watching this? Because you know, as the goals are going in, that, you know, Team A are going to win on the night, and it's just I don't get much out of these fixtures. And again, I just, the simultaneous kickoff crap, just it's not relevant enough for our league.
The simultaneous kickoff, it would work if there was more teams. And I think if the geography of Australia was a bit smaller, because if you think about it, I'm not too sure on the exact time distance between Perth and Wellington, but I'm pretty sure there's a considerable time difference. And to have...
Yes.
To have...
I live in Perth. I can tell you right now, we're usually 4 hours behind, yeah, and we're 5 hours because of the daylight savings.
Yeah, there we go. Right, so now you'd have to have... Let's just say, for example, there is a team like Perth play at home, Wellington play at home. There's got to be a 5-hour gap between them, and still, I think it's pretty hard to do with Australia's geography.
Wellington fans, or just anyone in New Zealand, have had to watch games at midnight before. They've had to watch their team play, their local team play at midnight in the supposedly local league before, when they've decided to have a 7 p.m. kickoff for us. And now Wellington comes to town. I think that's a bit of a farce, but that's because you couldn't find anything more unrelated to talk about. So as I was just saying, again, on the theme of Christchurch and the attacks, so obviously Wellington won 3-1 against the Wanderers, and Krishna made his own, Roy Krishna, now a New Zealand citizen, definitely meant a lot to him, although he is a massive Christian. You know, those Muslims being attacked, it definitely meant the world to him. He had a lot of touching tributes before the game, and there was a fund set up by the New Zealand government for the attack, and the 7,600 crowd at that game raised $35,000 for the government's fund for the attack there. So that was really, really beautiful. I was just talking on Roy Krishna. I was going to segue. The football that he's playing at the moment, right? We look at the big name players from all the teams that have been impressing us throughout the season. You can think of Craig Goodwin, the immediate impact he made. You know, Jason Davidson from Perth, these consistent performers. And I think Roy Krishna has always sort of been there or thereabouts, maybe like, you know, the fifth, sixth best player. And in the past few weeks, he's really stepped it up a notch. I think he's going to be one of the favourites for the Johnny Warren medal. And we're now at the part of the season where it's definitely topical. So what do you guys think? Is Roy Krishna going to take home the Johnny Warren?
It's between him or Castro. And I really feel Castro will pick it up again, mainly because Perth have been that dominant team all year. For me, it just makes sense to give it to Diego Castro. Although in saying that, I wouldn't be upset if Roy Krishna did get the award.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if Krishna got the award. I just don't think he will. Like, Castro is a good shout.
Really, there's been too much competition at Perth, is the thing I would say.
Yeah, who else would you say if it wasn't Castro?
Well, Castro had 7 weeks out. You remember that, right? He had 7 weeks out, and he's had Keogh, Economides, Jason Davidson, Neil Kilkenny to compete with. I mean, it's just, whereas for Wellington, they've had Krishna performing at his best, getting 3-2 votes in the Alex Tobin week in, week out. You know, DFS votes, he's top of that pile now as well. If we're going to use them as the simulator that I started back in round 3, round 4, when I was sort of running that, if I was still running that, Krishna would be miles ahead. Because he's the one that's constantly performing, whereas with Castro, not only did he have the weeks out, but the Perth votes are very congested.
What about Barbarossa? I mean, I think Barbarossa would be up there.
Yeah. Again, I would say that Honda and Toivonen have been stealing votes from him. Maybe even Lawrence Thomas or some other big victory players. Whereas you look at, and maybe you could make the argument for a Stephen Taylor as well, but I think Krishna has always been polling, whereas Castro had a few weeks where he wasn't due to Economides having his golden period and et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. It's just the way I see it. I think Krishna is a clear favourite at the moment, but I could be wrong.
Wouldn't it be good if a goalkeeper won actually the Johnny Warren medal? That'd be fantastic.
That would never happen.
That never happened. It'll never happen. Absolutely fantastic if it did.
Sorry, what was it? I didn't hear
on
that.
On Krishna, is he out of contract this year? Because I'm understand that he is.
Do any of you boys know?
I read a rumor that Sydney and Newcastle were interested in him back in January.
Yeah, and
there
was a J-League club that was out of contract.
Yeah, and I think another Melbourne team was after him. So I'm not sure if he still is out of contract or not. But I find if he is out of contract, that's really interesting for me to see what will happen there, because you'd assume he would have re-signed by now.
Well, from what I've been hearing as well, Rudan is going to be the Western United coach, and apparently he's taking two players with him. We don't know who the two players are.
And,
so
that was Curto and there was David Williams. Those are the two that were rumoured.
Also, David Williams is linked to Adelaide United.
Fancy David Williams peaking like this at the age of 35, 36?
He's not that old. He's only like 30.
No. He's definitely.
David Williams is not 35. I'm sorry. No.
No, David Williams is definitely not 35.
No.
Oh, okay. Wasn't he playing in like the NSL? Like the very last few years of the NSL?
No.
David Williams is 31 years old.
Yeah, he's 31.
Who the fuck am I?
He's born in 1988. He's just a bit older than I am.
Who was the first club that he played for?
Queensland
Raw as a junior.
Back when they were Queensland Raw.
Yeah, when they were back, literally when they were called Queensland Raw. Then he went overseas to Bromby, played for North Queensland. Then he was on that weird loan to Sydney FC. And then Melbourne City for a couple of years. Then he went to Hungary, and now he's at Wellington.
Right.
I'm not surprised he has. Has peaked, to be honest, because overseas would have done him a world of good.
Yeah. We do have more football to talk about, guys. Melbourne City, hitting a bit of form. I don't know what this means. I guess it's good for finals, but you'd have to say that the biggest story would actually be on Sydney FC's end, in that they're sort of starting to drop again. Not looking at their best. Also, maybe Champions League playing a part, but I doubt it would be. Melbourne City, though, Shane Harrison getting on the board. He's starting to look okay. Well, what do we make of this particular fixture, boys?
Wait, before we move on, did anyone see the pitch at Leichhardt Oval?
What do you expect when the leagues played the night before? That was the same with Newcastle. Both of those pitches were absolutely horrific.
It literally looked like a cow paddock. Like, it was that bad that I don't know how we're going to share with the other codes, but seriously, there has to be. Look, I understand it was torrential rain in Sydney and whatnot, but it's not a good look for our league, especially if it's being televised overseas, that this is the quality of the pitches that we have to play on because of.
Wasn't that game supposed to be played at Brookvale? Because they didn't have league on this weekend at
Brookvale.
Oval. I'm confused Sam that Jones, one got changed.
Sam Jones lives up that way. He was telling me that the rugby league also got in the way of that as well.
But they didn't play at Brookvale this weekend. Oh. Bloody
hell,
Manly.
I doubt
Manly would have allowed them to play on their field.
And Manly
it was awkward because there was a bit of a this particular fixture, there was a bit of like a, it was sort of unknown where they were playing, and then in about round 7 or 8 they announced, yeah, it's going to be Brookvale Oval, all the fans, you know, in the northern suburbs will get their game, and then I don't really know what happened because, yeah, then it eventually wasn't at Brookvale again. So, I don't know. But Shane Harrison, guys, Melbourne City, are we impressed?
Well, it's about time.
it was about time that he stood up.
Yeah, it was about time that he actually did something.
Yes. Okay.
Did the second goal end up counting as his, or was that an own goal? Because I watched the game, I just don't know what happened afterwards, whether they changed it up or...
No, it got counted as an own goal. I think Paolo Retro got the own goal from last time
okay.
I checked.
I wasn't sure, because that was one of those 50-50 decisions.
No, it looked like an own goal, but I don't know. If we're unsure, I always like to give it to the striker just to add to their tally.
Hmm.
But then you get stuff like the Diego Castro one on Friday night. That was on target, though. No. It wasn't at all. I might have to rewatch it again, but I didn't think it was at all.
I thought it was, but who knows? No,
it was a clear goal, and as I understood, it was given a clear goal, but then originally it was given a Castro goal, and I don't actually know. I don't really care. Let's talk Marco Kurtz again, guys. Rumours of Brisbane, but then Robbie Fowler rumours at Brisbane as well. Rumours of Western United, but then the Rudan leagues are too strong there. So Marco Kurtz about to leave Australia? Because it'd be
I think he is.
Yeah, it'd be really awful if he has. I mean, everything that I was saying at the start of the season, to go back on it with his behaviour and the
the eccentricness of him.
Yeah, he really toned down on that, and I think there was more of a professional style about him. But at the same time, because Adelaide have had such a mediocre season, I don't know. I guess my feelings are still mixed on him. I think he's very good, and he's brought a lot, and he's learnt a lot, and he's been very critical the same way that Marcus Babbel has. But it's just this very, very awful situation, and I would hate to see him go, but it doesn't appear that there are any other options, does it?
Well, I think they're gone.
Outside.
You go.
Myself?
Yeah, saying I think that he's gone, unfortunately. Like, if the Robbie Fowler links are true, which they seem to be getting stronger, as time goes on, there's no space, there's no place for him unless he holds out for MacArthur Southwest or whatever they're going to be called. But there's strong rumours that Ante Milicic is going to get that role. So, unfortunately, we're going to lose a character like him in the league.
Yeah, there could be an outside for Kurtz to take over Mariners for next season if Stage doesn't sign on.
But why would he take that job? He knows what the Mariners have been through. Why would he take that job? That's just my opinion. That's what I think, personally.
Anybody would take the job, really.
Then who would be a candidate for the Mariners' job? Either say Stage doesn't take it on. Who is promoted? Do we give an NPL coach a shot? Do we maybe give Aloisi another shot at it again? Or do we hire someone from overseas?
Zach, you had a candidate in mind, didn't you? Because when I mentioned Nick Montgomery, you told me privately that you didn't like the Nick Montgomery suggestion at all. And it's also worth noting, just Marcel, I think, we're seeing bits and pieces of everything from the Mariners. So, Zach, you have this one particular person in mind for the club that you were telling me about?
This is a long time ago, Matt. My memory is fading.
Maybe it was someone else. Wasn't there like a Manchester United guy? Alex, it might have actually been you.
Oh, that was me last week on the pod.
Yeah, that was Alex last week.
Oh, no. Look, Mike Phelan has absolutely nothing to do with the club right now, really. And I doubt he would leave Man United in the position he's in over there to take over the Mariners. It was more of a stunt with Mulvey, I believe, and it didn't really pay off, and Phelan was left uninterested, is the impression that I got from it.
Okay.
Phelan fly back this week because of the international break to have discussions with the Mariners board about what the plan is for next season? Because that's what I did read.
He did. What the plans were remain up in the air. His plan was more... When he was first brought in, he was introduced as almost a mentor for Mulvey, in that he'd be keeping track of the club and letting Mulvey know ideas, tips, things to add on as an advisory role.
Okay.
You see, so but just going back to what Marcel said before, sort of, you know, do you try someone from the NPL? Do you go foreign? I feel like the Mariners have sort of tried a bit of everything. So
they've gone foreign.
Hey?
That's the point I made last week. They haven't gone foreign, so my guess is a foreign coach would probably have to come in, because something tells me no one from Australia would want to take that role.
It's a poison chalice, if you think about it.
Mm.
It's literally just like, if you do well, it's going to go well for you, but if you fail, you're literally going to be like, it's like another one bites the dust.
I guess it just... If we can't even sort of think of who this, you know, might be. I mean, does it not scream that they have to make some other change elsewhere? Like, you know, I just, whether Charlesworth sells the club or not, they're going to need something dramatic to happen in order for fortunes to change. And you can talk about managers all you want, but I mean, there's just all sorts going wrong at that club. And, you know, if something doesn't change at the very top, we're going to continue to have this debate no matter what. And it's just, I'm done with it. I'm actually just getting frustrated because I had my massive rant for a reason. I want that dickhead to do something. I want him to just realize the asset that he has for what it is. And, you know, Zach, I wonder why you have a membership. I'm correct in saying you are a member of the club.
I am, yes.
What do you do? Like, you obviously, you're very dedicated. You show up. You love the club, no matter what. But I mean, is it more of a football game when you're going there, or is it just a reason to, you know, chat with friends and people that you have in the community?
Or is it a battle for the club, the soul of the club? That's another one.
Yeah.
I'd say currently it's more whenever you attend the game inactive, in particular with Mariners, it's more of a cry for things to change and go back to how they used to be, where I think we all would have seen the stats that have come out in the last couple of weeks, where we used to be the top club, performing club, for almost a decade. So really attending the games, it's more about trying or crying out for the way things had been.
Mm-hmm. So this talk of the people at the top, have they sort of got in touch with you as members? Are they very you know, communicative? Do they send you know, did you get a lot of like letters and things to sort of say, you know, this is a statement from the club for, you know, sort of reason A, and you know, these are the things we sort of want to get in touch with you as fans about to improve our community. I mean, is there anything like that going on?
The short answer is no. I think the last letter I got from the club regarding that sort of statement was about 3 years ago, saying we're addressing our issues, restructuring, rather.
Wasn't there an email that was released towards the beginning of the year that Charlesworth said, like, keep the faith, we'll do good?
That was when McCormack and all got signed, saying, look, we're a big club, we can bring in these big players, yet the situation hasn't changed.
It was a high.
That was a big thing.
Because I remember when the Wanderers leadership sent out their mass communication to us saying, we have a big stadium coming, so it's going to fix everything. And then I remembered maybe a couple of weeks later, maybe a month later, Mariners received something similar. Because he goes, I was gonna, you know, I had an offer for $8.2 million, but I want to invest into the club, beating his chest and everything. So I'm not sure if it was in the same period.
On that investment comment, a lot of the letters that we do receive and the updates we receive are regarding the infrastructural changes that he would like to bring in, putting in hotels and whatnot either side of the stadium. His interest in the club is very minimal in his letters. It's all about developing around the stadium and aesthetics of the club rather than
the actual team itself.
Yes.
Look, I feel your pain because I know what it's like as a Wanderers fan. You know, we've gone through, you know, our managerial chop and change.
Not to that extent.
Yeah, not to that extent. But the managerial chop and change, the, you know, the leadership not giving a damn about their fans and just wanting basically the money and the memberships and everything like that. Like, the game that we had on against Wellington, like, that basically rules us out of our finals. Because mathematically, we were still in it. Now we're actually gone. I don't think that with our
results. Oh, so mathematically, you're out too.
Say it again.
Mathematically, yeah, you're out too.
It's all happening. And I think for us, that's kind of a blessing as well, because that's it. We've got zero things to play for. We just need not to finish last. That's it. Like, that's our end game, just not to finish last.
So I think Wanderers fans are actually in a very fortunate position. Hear me out, please. Having a manager like Marcus Babbel around, his overseas experience, his charisma, he's getting to understand more about the Australian football scene, more about Australian culture. You have the new stadium, you'll get a sugar hit from it. And if Babbel really has another off season to really turn things around in the signings department, I think the Wanderers have no excuse to go up and be a top four club again and, you know, to really make
us. I agree with you 100%. This is why a lot of people in the beginning of the season for us was like, get rid of him, he doesn't understand, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, it's not his, firstly, not his team. Secondly, he hasn't been given a lot of investment. Okay, all his signings that he made in the off season, so in the middle of the season, have actually done things for the Wanderers. I've mentioned this in a couple of episodes ago. All his signings have been the impactful ones. Now, if I'm correct, there's about maybe 8 changes that are going to happen in the off season for the Wanderers. A few people off contract, and I think a few people just want to leave. And that leaves up a lot of space. And I think Riera is going to go, whether to the Middle East or Second Division Spain. So that's a marquee position. Ready to
bring in Georgievski.
Oh, yeah, 100%. We're going to bring in Georgievski. That's great. I'm talking about someone
great.
If
you want someone to give it all for the team, he's your man. That's all I'm going to say about that.
See, there was a big rumor that he was going to sign for Western United.
But Josh Risden ended up taking that spot, and because I heard from insiders at Newcastle that he agreed terms with Western United, but after Risden signed, he didn't want to borrow it for some reason. So at the end of the day, he's from Western Sydney, isn't he, Georgievski? So that's a perfect fit, if you ask me.
Well, if Georgievski does sign with the Wanderers, you know, I don't think there's been an official release. I don't know if you guys heard anything official about him actually signing.
Oh, it's just SBS The World Game, but usually they're spot on with what they report anyway, so.
Look, it's pretty good. Look, we do need defensive reinforcements this season. Ziegler's been out, you know, he's not coming back at all this season. He's been injured literally since the FFA Cup game against Melbourne City. That's how long he's been injured for. And apparently the surgery that he had initially, you know, he had to get a second opinion on it. And because he played on a injury, it's made it even worse.
Is Bobby Hand going to bring? Is Bobby Hand going to bring any German mates over? Like
Bobby Hand's not going to stay.
I see it. Yeah, I heard. He was leaving.
I think he was only signed on a 1-year contract, and from what I understand, he.
Yeah, let me rephrase the question. Can Babbel bring anyone else from Germany?
Oh yeah, we're looking to sign Ribery if you believe the reports.
I doubt that will happen. I'm sorry. I mean, I'd love it to. It would be amazing with the new stadium as well. That would be a perfect story. But someone of Rivers' calibre, yeah, he's, what, 35, 36. I just can't see him getting paid enough to come here.
He's been rumoured to the A-League for over, like, a decade. You remember when Gallas was at Perth? That's when, like, Ribery rumours started. And he's been rumoured to Perth on 4 separate occasions. So just miss me with that bullshit. No, seriously, you know, you always kind of, whenever there's a big foreign player or any sort of foreign influence, like what you get with Babbel and the Wanderers, usually there's a lot of echoing statements about it. Like, I don't know if you guys have noticed much, but there's always talk about, like, said talent from Spain coming to, because he's Catrice, mate. And that's how one day ended up becoming a Perth signing. I don't think one day has been a spectacle, in fact, he's not. But, you know, I was just wondering if there was any sort of influence like that with Babbel.
Look, I wouldn't put it past him. He's finally got a freedom to sign players he wants his team with. We're going to have a few foreign players available spots to go, even if that Bonavartia is leaving and Lorente's not staying. So that's at least 3 out of a possible. Actually, you're 4, because if you can't buy me on, I'm going to 4 spot. And surely with the connections that Babbel has, we can fill up you know, with some decent players. I pray that we fill up with some decent players, some decent foreign players. You know, look for us a striker. You know, someone actually really good, or a midfielder, someone really good.
I gotta say, boys, this has been a really mixed chat, and I think we should conclude at some point. Any other thoughts on any potential signings or managers or anything to bring up? Because I do like these conversations at the end of the show.
Well, it's an estimated guess. Adelaide's new coach will be Josh. Next
because of the Dutch
ownership. Yeah, like he's been trying to second or third tier.
It's a third tier that's and, just been promoted to the second tier.
Oh, okay, and almost under that, Van der Poel's, I think that's his name, under his club, most of the managers have been Dutchmen, so I fully expect him to bring in a fellow countryman at the helm. And it could be anyone, because Dutch coaches generally have been pretty successful in Australia.
Well,
so.
You know, the first coach that came to my mind was, I don't even remember his name, that guy that had that terrible stint at Brisbane Roar. So I was actually about to say Dutch coaches haven't had much success, immediately thinking of that bloke. I seriously don't remember his name at all. But, I guess mixed reception on any Dutch managers then. Guys, that'll just about do us for this round 22 show. Zach, it's been a pleasure to have your company, and I apologise that this show didn't run as smoothly as it usually does. We're a bit all over the place tonight, but I do appreciate your company. Alex, Marcel, this one's been pretty good. Always remember, guys, we are partnered up with the New Entertainment Order and all the wonderful work that Theo Aspro's doing there as well. If you really like the show, share us on your platforms, social media, the likes. We very much appreciate your support. I've been Matthew Olsen, Alex Yamos, Marcel Abood, and Zach Colbrook beside me.
All right, cool. See you later, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
This has been the Full Time Podcast. Thanks for listening, and make sure you tune in again next week as we wrap up another round of A-League action.